Joe Sheehan joins us. Joe, the fabulous newsletter. Before we even get into the content, tell fans how they can find you through the newsletter, which I love getting every day. I think it's the best thing out there.
Appreciate that, Marty. The best place to go for excerpts and information on subscribing is at Facebook. You go to facebook.com, Sheehan Newsletter. I promise you I'm not getting your phone number or your blood type or anything like that through Facebook. You can sign up there. There's actually a 10% discount if you sign up through Facebook. Go to Facebook now. You can actually see my full predictions for the year, division titles, World Series, all that fun stuff. So hope people will check that out.
No, it's great. It really is. And, you know, I've been a big fan for years, so I appreciate it. Number two hitters in baseball. I saw Cespedes was hitting second, and they've got Belt now in the two spot, the big first baseman. Is this where we've gone that Trout hits second from time to time? Why is this?
Well, this is something we're number crunching, where you actually just put computers in charge and say, put all the possible lineups in an order, what you expect these guys to hit, and it spits out the answer. And what we've learned through doing that is that the best hitter should bat second. It creates the best balance of hitting with runners on base, leveraging the power, and getting on base. Typically, your best hitter is going to have a really good on-base percentage. So, the general principle is you want your best hitters to hit more often. Now, you can take that too far. You don't want your best hitter hitting leadoff, because every game he'll lead off and he'll waste his power. The best hitter batting second kind of also works in tandem, Marty, and I know you've seen some of this, not necessarily in San Francisco, but with the pitcher batting eighth. If you're building a National League lineup and you bat the pitcher eighth and hit just one of the other eight hitters ninth, it allows that best hitter in the second spot to bat with runners on base more often. So, like I say, this is about 25, 30 years now that we've been talking about doing this. And you now see about half the teams in baseball putting their best hitter second. And as you mentioned, I grew up with it too, the slap hitting second baseman in the two spot. You just don't really see that model anymore.
You like it?
It's efficient. I mean, I'm, kind of always been a fan of efficiency, so I like to see it. I think that we know now that the get them on, move them over, and single them in offense doesn't really work. If the game were to change in some way, a dead ball or something along those lines, you might see back to that. But it's, I really want to see the best hitters get more at-bats, so this works for me.
All right, very good. Joe Sheehan with us. The Sheehan newsletter is absolutely terrific. All right, let's talk about the National League West. Obviously we've had two amazing games just to start the season. We've got 160 more to go, but you can't win them all unless you win the first two, I guess. But let's get your take on the National League West. We've got a couple of games under your belt. You've seen Colorado's pitching, Arizona at home, the Humidor. You've seen the Giants bullpen. We've seen the Dodgers and Kershaw Jansen. And we've seen the Padres scrappy, but can't get it done. So take me through the West a little bit.
Yeah, I like the Giants' chances if they never allow a run. I think that's a pretty good baseball
that's good.
Strategy.
That's good, yes.
We're looking at some that's my sabermetric analysis. But, I think that if you're the Giants, when you're stealing these games early on, you score two runs in two games in L.A. and you win them both. If you think about a team that isn't going to be at full strength until June in all likelihood, any games like this you can steal make a difference down the road. Now, I still look at the Dodgers as the 800-pound gorilla in the division. I think you'll still can expect them to win this division. But there are some flaws in the team. It is a soft rotation at the back end, although they have some internal depth that they can bring out as the year goes on. They're going to be playing around with the outfield spots a little bit. Obviously, they're going to miss Justin Turner. Logan Forsythe, I believe, made three errors already at third base.
Yes, he did.
He's got a lot of experience at third base, just off to a bad start. So, this is an opportunity for the Giants to at least keep things close in the early going and maybe even get some separation from the other two teams in the division. I see the Diamondbacks, and the Dodgers are going to win the division. And then actually, I've got the Diamondbacks, the Giants, and the Rockies in that order, but not separated by a whole lot, to where the healthiest team or the team that does best in head-to-head games or the team that makes the best trade deadline acquisition probably ends up leading that group. You mentioned the Humidor in Arizona. I believe they've scored a million runs in the first two games.
17.
So maybe they need to recalibrate that, I think. But, I look at that. The Diamondbacks kind of didn't do a ton this winter. They traded for Steven Souza. He's obviously hurt at the moment. They started the offseason. We heard a lot about them wanting to trade away Zach Greinke. So it wasn't clear if they were going to, leverage this success that they had last year, winning 93 games, getting to the division series. Even at that, I think taking the win off was better than what the Rockies did. And I think you can get some interesting conversations about the Rockies. You know, they led the National League in runs scored last year.
Right.
But when you actually deflate the numbers, you say, you know, how good is their offense? It actually rates in the bottom third of the National League. And instead of worrying about the offense this winter, the Rockies went out and just continued to pour money into the bullpen with Brian Shaw and Wade Davis. So it feels like the Rockies are kind of like those old Red Sox and Cubs teams from when, you know, Marty, you and I were growing up, where because of the ballpark, they think they have a good offense and a bad pitching staff, when the Rockies actually had a mediocre offense and a pretty good pitching staff last year.
Mm. What do you like about the Giants? Because this is a team coming off 98 losses. You're an analytical guy. They went out and got McCutcheon. They got Jackson. They got Longoria. But Samardzija looks like maybe he'll only miss one turn. There's good news from him today. Bumgarner's out probably to the middle of June or maybe a little bit more than that. Melanson, I don't think we're going to see at all, if you ask my opinion. What do you like about the Giants that you could put them second?
I think they play in a gorgeous ballpark, Marty.
That's good. That's a good start. It's a good start.
Yeah, it's tough. I actually had them third. I've got them behind the Diamondbacks going into the season. Definitely concerns about that rotation. But you know, we saw last night Johnny Cueto. Now, this is the Johnny Cueto we didn't see a lot of last year. And if healthy, he's always been this pitcher. This guy can be a number two type starter on a good team. I think the Giants don't have much margin for error in that rotation, even before Bumgarner got hurt. They need Cueto, you know, to be the $22 million number two starter. I think if you give them healthy versions of Bumgarner, Cueto, and Samardzija, that's one of the better top threes in the league. You know, we saw what Ty Block did last on opening day. You know, get some depth there. If he gives them some depth at the back of the rotation. But to me, the Giants, to compete, are going to have Bumgarner, Cueto, and Samardzija, when healthy, really at the top of their game. This is going to have to be a run prevention team. I've always liked their core. The homegrown core, I'm still a fan of. The Posey, Crawford, Bell, the guys that they brought up, when they drafted, brought through the system, were the core of that 2014 team. I've always been a big Brandon Crawford guy. I think that's still a competitive team. Now, there were a lot of people saying, should the Giants kind of start over after what happened last year? And I don't think there was a path to that when you have the core that they had, you know, adding Bumgarner and Cueto to that group. I think that they did really well to get an Andrew McCutcheon, to get an Evan Longoria, while staying under the luxury tax threshold and given the fact that they didn't have a great farm system to play with.
They may be developing a power bullpen. Osich was terrific. Will Smith is coming back, and he's a monster. And Watson is off to a good start. Dyson was shaky in spring training, but Strickland has pitched fairly well. Guerin looks like if you give him a clean inning, he probably can help you. They may be developing that kind of bullpen that you like with the strength, believe it or not, from the left side, not the right side.
Which will be important when you're playing all those games against the Dodgers and all their left-handed power. You know, in those 19 games, you want to have that kind of depth on the left side so that you can always throw a tough lefty against Seager and Bellinger. You mentioned a lot of those names. A lot of those names have been in San Francisco for a while. You know, they traded for Smith. He got hurt almost immediately. They just picked up Watson in the spring, but you look at an Osich, you look at Guerin, you look at Strickland. I mean, we thought this was going to be kind of the building blocks of a good bullpen last year. And this is where I don't think the loss of Melanson hurts them all that much. I think most teams can afford to lose a relief pitcher. And as long as you've got the quantity behind it, it's not going to hurt them all that much. So, yeah, Mitch, I think there is a lot of strength there. I go back to that 2010 team. You know, that was an anonymous bullpen. It really wasn't a very well-known collection of guys going into September of 2010. And they basically had three runs that September, went on to win the World Series. You know, Bruce Bochy kind of made his bones taking an anonymous group of relievers and turning them into a good bullpen. So this is something clearly he's done before.
Yeah, he loves it. When he does well, he has a good bullpen. They go hand in hand. Look at his career record. You'll see it. Have we fallen in love with velocity to such an extent we forget about command and where the ball's got to be placed? I watched Chapman last night and throwing 100, and all of a sudden Steve Pierce is pulling him down the left field line. Pilar is hitting him into the gap in right center, and he was lucky to get out of the inning throwing 100. Are we in love with velocity to the point that we forgot about command and location?
I don't think it's a forgot about thing, but there is the elements that you can teach command and secondary pitches the way you can't teach velocity.
Okay.
And I think that that goes back all the way down to amateur ball now, where, you know, we select kids when they're 14, 15 for velocity. And it's great when you can find somebody who has secondary pitches and who can spot the ball and who can work up in the zone and down in the zone. And those are all good things to have. But the thing that gets you noticed is, can you top 93, 94 as a prep? In college, can you get to 95? As a prospect, do you throw 95? These are the things we're selecting pitchers for. So those other things are valuable, but they're also regressive traits. We're just not taking the 18-year-old who throws 87 and turning into a top prospect.
No, nope, not. But I'll tell you one thing. You got to know where you're throwing. There's control and command, and I think you got to have command. But look, it's tough to square up 98. It's easier to square up 87. So I understand the love of velocity. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'll trust you on that. I had enough trouble squaring up 57. So
I could get to about 74, maybe. That was about it for me at the batting cage, and I knew it was going to be straight. That's as far as I could go. Houston Astros, are they the best team in baseball and the best organization? Do they have it together better than everybody?
I think it's easier to answer the first question. Yes, right now they're the best team in baseball. They took a world champion, and they fixed the biggest problem it had by adding Verlander last season and then Gerrit Cole in the offseason. So you look at that rotation now with Keuchel and McCullers, Charlie Morton, and now the two guys they got last year. They're going to score a ton of runs as well. So, and I think the bullpen, you know, we remember that bullpen being so problematic for them, but when you actually look at the talent in that bullpen, it's going to be an asset. It's very hard to find a weakness on this team. And they have a Forrest Whitley, who's suspended at the moment, but one of the top pitching prospects in the game. Kyle Tucker, who's one of the best prospects in the game overall, coming through the system. So there's cheap talent coming through the system as well. Best organization's harder, though. I think you look at the Astros, you look at the Cubs. I don't think a lot of people write off the Yankees and the Dodgers because of the money, the asset that they can spend, but those are two very well-run organizations that are, at the moment, not built so much around high-priced players, but around the core of a player development group. So I think those four have separated themselves a bit, but it's hard to choose among them. And in any given year, they're all doing really good things. And even lower down the standings, you look at what the Pirates have done integrating data collection and kind of melding the front office's sabermetric bent with an old school manager like Clint Hurdle. I think there's just a lot of it's much harder to identify bad organizations now than it is to identify good ones. They're just the standard in baseball has moved so dramatically forward over the last 15 years.
Mm, very good. Joe Sheehan with us. Always a pleasure to talk, Joe. All right. Who should win the National League pennant, and who will win the National League pennant?
Yeah, I think the Cubs are on the track that the 90s Yankees were, where, you know, the Yankees won in 96, got eliminated in the playoffs in 97, and then won three straight World Series. That's where I think the Cubs are, 1-16, eliminated in 17. I have them winning this year and then also winning the next few. They're just a tremendous young core. They have one of the youngest lineups in baseball, despite the fact that they've made the playoffs 3 years running. They're still that incredibly young. They're going to score a ton of runs this year. They've got a good enough rotation and a good enough bullpen to back what's going to be the best offense in the National League. So I've got them winning.
All right. Who should win? Cubs. Who will win? Nationals. And I'll tell you, my other dark horse is the Mets. I don't know if they can hang in there the whole way, but I love the rotation coming back. Maybe it's just New York baseball, but I think Washington or the Mets may be the team that sneaks in there.
Well, the Mets, their success or failure the last 3 years have been entirely how many starts do they get out of Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard, Mats. So if you tell me those guys are going to make 85 starts this year, I absolutely can see the Mets making a run. I mean, not that they don't have pitching depth, but, you know, they don't have dominant starters where those four can be dominant. We've certainly seen them get off to good starts here. They're 2-0 behind Syndergaard and DeGrom here this week.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's fun. You know, again, you do a great job. Now, your newsletter came out this week with some of your predictions, and we'll just take one or two of them. Who should win the National League Cy Young, and who will?
Got to remember my own predictions. See, quoting back to me, but I believe I had Clayton Kershaw for both of those, which
yes,
is just basically the prediction I make every year. You know, the only thing that's kept Clayton Kershaw from winning it every year has been his back. On a per inning basis, he's been the best pitcher in baseball the last 2 years as well. Lost both Cy Youngs to Max Scherzer because he missed time with the back problem. If Kershaw gives you 30 starts, he wins the Cy Young Award.
You know, it's interesting. I always say if you get him in a long inning, you can get to him. But, you know, it's not that easy to do that. All right, that was your prediction, and we'll let you do one more. NL MVP, you've got who should win, Bryce Harper. who will win, and I guess you're a Cub fan, Anthony Rizzo.
Well, I think Rizzo is going to have a lot of narrative value going for him when you look at what I expect the Cubs to be this year. Also, the way that lineup is structured, he'll have the opportunity to drive in more runs than a Chris Bryant will. I think you'll be able to make a sabermetric argument for Harper and maybe a handful of other guys. But the success of the Cubs, the perception of Rizzo as the leader in that team, the RBIs, which still are a factor in MVP voting, and the fact that he's finished in the top five twice without winning, I think there'll be a sense of, okay, it's his turn. The Cubs win 100 games. Rizzo has his usual stat line, and he gets MVP.
All right, I could keep you on forever here. You did your team previews, and you did the Giants, and interesting, you said your favorite Giant is?
Brandon Crawford.
How about that?
And some of this, left-handed hitting shortstops are rare, and I know this because I was a 12-year-old left-handed hitting shortstop. At the time, I guess I had to root for Craig Reynolds, and it was about the only one out there. But I've always kind of had an affinity for guys like that, Ernie Riles, Bill Spires. Crawford is not just in that category, but I love the fact that he was such a wonderful defender to watch. I mean, this is a time when we have a lot of great defensive shortstops, and Crawford is maybe not splashy as some of the other ones, but solid. Better range, I think, than he necessarily gets credit for, and developed into a heck of a hitter as well. So, yeah, one of my favorite players, Crawford.
I love it. Joe, thank you so much. And give us the Facebook. It's Sheehan. Go ahead and tell us again.
Facebook.com, Sheehan Newsletter, and you get a 10% discount by signing up through that.
Beautiful. Great having you on. Love having you on, Joe. Good luck, and we'll talk to you later in the season.
Thanks, Marty. Take care.
Very good. Boy, Joe Sheehan. Josh, how do you like that? Thumbs up.
Two thumbs up, Marty.
Yeah, isn't he amazing? I mean, you could.
Very analytical. I like that he likes Crawford.
Well, and plus, I love the way he explains baseball.